This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave. Next week, the Cincinnati May Festival presents Leonard Bernstein's Symphony No. 3, Kaddish, as part of its Beethoven, Bernstein, and Brotherhood celebration. Kaddish is dedicated to the memory of President Kennedy, who was assassinated shortly after Bernstein completed the work in 1963. It's based on Jewish prayers traditionally recited for the dead. Bernstein envisioned it as a life-affirming plea for universal peace.
With amen on my lips, I approach your presence, Father. Not with fear, but with a certain respectful fury. Do you not recognize my voice? I am that part of man you made to suggest his immortality. You surely remember, Father, the part that refuses death, that insists on you, divines your voice, guesses your grace. And always you have heard my voice. And always you have answered me with a rainbow, a raven, a plague, something. But now I see nothing. This time you show me nothing at all. Are you listening, Father? You know who I am. Your image. That stubborn reflection of you that man has shattered, extinguished, banished. And now he runs free. Free to play with his newfound fire, avid for death, voluptuous, complete, and final death. Lord God of hosts, I call you to account. You let this happen, Lord of hosts. You with your manna, your pillar of fire. You asked for faith. Where is your own? Why have you taken away your rainbow, that pretty bow you tied round your finger? To remind you never to forget your promise. For lo, I do set my bow in the cloud, and I will look upon it that I may remember my everlasting covenant. Your covenant! Your bargain with man! Tin God, your bargain is tin! It crumples in my hand, and where is faith now? Yours or mine?
When the Kaddish Symphony is performed next week in Cincinnati, the speaker will be a woman. Not just any woman, but Bernstein's daughter, Jamie Bernstein Thomas. Thomas is a writer, musician, and broadcaster. She's written several concert narrations, including The Bernstein Beat, a concert for young people which features her father's music. In preparing for the Cincinnati performance of Kaddish, Thomas made some revisions to the spoken text. I asked her why.
To be perfectly honest, I have always had a problem with this narration, and I'm not alone. I think many of us, my siblings certainly, and I, and many listeners, many people in the audience over the years, have really had trouble with the narration that goes with the symphony. It's kind of bombastic in God's face. It's a kind of shaking his fist at the heavens. My father wrote it himself. It's very personal and very over the top and kind of mawkish in places, perhaps. And it's really hard to digest. And I think it alienated a lot of people from the symphony and made it even harder to listen to than it already was. It's quite challenging musically. But this narration, while accessible because it's in English and is in normal English speech, is just so kind of hard to sit through. It can make you uncomfortable and embarrassed, and I, for one, had a lot of trouble with it.
So for this performance, you've taken a lot of the bombast out. Do you feel in a way, though, that was difficult in a way that you're taking a lot of your father out of it?
Well, here's what I did, for better or for worse. I didn't really take anything out as much as I just added a layer on top. You know how in the Talmud, the Hebraic text is in the middle, and then one generation of rabbis wrote their opinions around the edge, and then the next generation of rabbis wrote their opinion around the edge of that until you've got all these different layers of opinion and argument. And that's sort of what I've done. And because it's so Talmudic, I feel it's, you know, very much in keeping with the whole spirit of the symphony. So what I've done is I've sort of commented on my father's narration in my own narration. And what I've asked the Cincinnati Symphony to do is to print my father's text and mine next to each other in the program so that you can refer to the first one and see how it relates to the one I've written. I'm sort of commenting on the original text.
So there's a dialogue there.
It's a kind of dialogue, and it's sort of another layer of arguing with your father, because my father's text begins and is addressed to, "Oh, my father." So he's addressing his God, of course, but it's also, in a way, an argument with his own father, who was a Talmudic scholar, and they had all sorts of troubles of their own. And now I'm adding my own layer of arguing with my father and taking him to task for his narration. So it's a kind of hall of mirrors of fighting with your dad, if you will, all the way back to the original creator, the father of us all.
I was thinking as I was listening to a recording of Kaddish that it's about hope in many ways, a hope for peace and a testament to art and to music's power to heal and to comfort. Do you remember your father using music as a source of comfort in your life, in your family's life?
Oh, music was sort of like water to a fish for us. It was just, you know, our ground of being. It was always around. It was beyond comfort. It was air. So I can't think of a time when it wasn't part of our daily lives. You know, we listened to pop music on the radio and in the car, and my father liked our pop music as much as he liked anything else. And really, he was just so interested in everything, so curious and so appreciative that it didn't matter what kind of music it was. Whatever music was around, he was going to get interested in it. So it was always around us and very much a source of comfort.
So does that mean he'd jump up from the dinner table and go over to the piano and start goofing around?
Well, he might not jump up from the dinner table because he really liked to eat. So he'd sit there and, you know, we'd finish up, but then we'd go back to the library for coffee. And that's, in that room, there wasn't a piano. There was this harpsichord, this very beautiful harpsichord that had been handmade by somebody whose name was on the harpsichord. I don't remember anymore. But for some reason, that was the instrument that all the music discussions wound up being discussed over. So he'd wind up playing any old thing on the harpsichord, and it always sounded so funny. You know, we'd be arguing about the chords in... We had an endless discussion about how the chord progressions went in You Keep Me Hanging On by the Supremes. And he thought it was in... The key he thought it was in was actually the dominant minor of the real tonic in that song, and we would argue about it endlessly. It was sort of like a musical equivalent of seeing the vase or the profiles of the people talking. And so we'd wind up discussing this over the harpsichord, where it sounded so silly. But that's where it all sort of wound up.
I was looking through family photos in the Humphrey Burton biography of your father, and there's you as a toddler sitting on Lillian Hellman's lap. And, of course, there were just parades of celebrities, I suppose, walking through your house. When you were growing up, what were the dinner parties like?
Oh, golly. Well, there were always tons of people in our house. It just seemed like there was always a lot of people and a lot of drinking and cigarette smoke and laughing and screaming and playing the piano and racket. I just thought grown-ups made a big racket and had fun all the time. That's what I thought being a grown-up meant. So the dinner parties were pretty convivial, noisy experiences. And I guess, you know, there were lots of famous people, many of whom I didn't really know at first, but after a while I started to recognize the faces as I got older. There was a little phase of Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor, and that was thrilling. And then there was the time when the guy who played Jimmy Olsen on Superman actually came to our house. That was the real big one for us. I'm sure that's not very impressive to the rest of the world, and I'm sure our parents wouldn't even remember, but that's what we cared about. Turns out he was a composer. Jack Larson, his name is.
Uh-huh. I think one of the things most people remember best about your father is his young people's concerts. A lot of us spent many Saturday mornings, later Saturday evenings, watching them on CBS. And in the concerts, he introduced young kids to all kinds of classical music, and he also introduced young performers in the concerts. Did you attend the concerts yourself as a kid?
I attended just about all of them. And in fact, looking back on the whole thing, I think that he was, in a way, writing the concerts for me and my siblings. I was about 5 years old when he started doing the young people's concerts, and maybe it was no coincidence that they got a little more complicated as my siblings and I grew older. And then when we started listening to pop music when I was about 10 or 11 and the Beatles arrived and everything, then the pop music started sneaking in as examples in my father's young people's concerts. And I know that came out of all our discussions about pop music in the car when we would listen to the radio. And, you know, we might be listening to, say, Pretty Ballerina by the Left Bank, and my father would say, hey, that song's in the Phrygian mode. Really? What's that? So the next thing you knew, we were learning all about modes, and by golly, the next Young People's concert was called What is a Mode? And he used Pretty Ballerina as the example for the Phrygian mode, and so on. And how the kids in the audience loved it when my father would sing, you know, snippets of And I Love Her in his terrible, gravelly voice. And all the girls would scream and squirm, and it was such fun for everybody.
Now, did you ever go to concerts with your dad? It's rock and roll concerts, I mean.
Oh, yeah, we went to a lot of concerts. We went to the Stones at the Garden. We went to see Michael Jackson together quite late, actually, in like 80. It would have been 88, I think, that we went to see Michael Jackson. And I took him to the Fillmore a few times. We saw The Who, and we saw Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And so, I mean, he was a fan.
Go on. What did he have to say about Michael Jackson?
Oh, he was a big fan of Michael Jackson. They actually met once in Los Angeles and hit it off in some bizarre way. I don't quite know what they talked about. I don't remember anymore. But somehow they admired each other's larger-than-lifeness, I think.
I'm speaking with Jamie Bernstein Thomas. She's the daughter of Leonard Bernstein. She's also a composer, writer, broadcaster. She and her brother and sister founded the Bernstein Education Through the Arts Fund to encourage arts in the schools. We'll talk more, Jamie, after break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Jamie Bernstein Thomas. She's the daughter of Leonard Bernstein. Your mother, Felicia, was an actress, and later she became a painter and also a political activist. She protested against the Vietnam War. She helped raise money for Black Panthers accused of terrorism. They were held on such high bail that many liberals saw it as a civil liberties issue. And one particular party that she and your father put together got a lot of flack. It was a fundraiser for the jailed Black Panthers, and the party was attended by Tom Wolfe. He portrayed it in the press as he just skewered them as posing as the radical chic. I think you were in your teens then, right? 17 or 18?
I was 17, yeah. I was a senior in high school.
Were you at the party?
Well, I was in the house, but I didn't really attend the party. I remember being up there for just a few minutes and then getting bored and sort of drifting off and hanging out with my boyfriend. And so I didn't really grasp what was going on. It was my mother's thing. My father had nothing to do with it. But what happened was that he showed up in the middle of this fundraising party and took over, as he always did when he walked into a room and started having a dialogue with one of the members of the Black Panther Party who was speaking. And this is what wound up in Tom Wolfe's book as just kind of quoted out of context, and it all just sounded a lot dopier than it actually was. It might have been, the guy was talking about something and he ended some sentence with, "You dig?" And my father said, "Well, I dig, absolutely, but what I'm trying to ask you is blah, 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 blah." So taken out of context, "I dig, absolutely," it made my father just sound like a doofus. It was a little questionable to begin with, but taken out of context, it sounded a million times worse.
Your father was bisexual, and as a teenager growing up, how much did you know about that part of his personal life?
As a teenager, I didn't know anything about it. I didn't really hear about it until, come to think of it, that same year when I was 17. And I went to Tanglewood for the summer to work as a guide. And I started hearing stories about his wild youth up at Tanglewood. And I subsequently asked my father about it, and he denied everything. He said, oh, there are people who are jealous of me, and they make up terrible stories. And he told me about some of these people who really existed who did make up terrible stories about him. But in fact, some of the stories were true. So I think he was just trying to cover his tracks. He couldn't deal with it yet back then. And it wasn't until about 5 years later that he came out of the closet, really, and began to talk about, not only talk about his past, but be honest about his present. And my parents separated over it because at that point my father had a lover, and he went off to live with the gay lover, and my mother was devastated, and oh golly, what a mess it all was. And in the end, my father couldn't really bear to live the gay lifestyle. He just couldn't. He was just a little too bourgeois in his soul to really go through with it. He grew a beard. He couldn't do that. He cut it off. He went back to my mother, and it's sort of, he just kind of came creeping back to his old life because he couldn't really sustain the other.
Where were you in all of this?
Where was I? I was about 24 at the time. I was in New York watching it all happen and trying to juggle being with one parent or another. And at this point, my mother became very sick with lung cancer. Her breast cancer of 4 years earlier, 3 years earlier, it came back, it metastasized. And so by the time my mother and father had their rapprochement, my mother was already sick. So they, you know, got reunited, and then a year later my mother died. So it was a completely awful time. It was an upheaval for everyone, and very sad, and, you know, nobody ever quite pulled out of that for about it took about a decade for everybody to get over it.
Had your mother forgiven your father when she died?
I think she had. The bottom line was that they were crazy about each other, and they did have this reconciliation. So, that whole part of it was more or less resolved by the time my mother was dying. So everybody could concentrate on the fact that she was dying and not so much on what had preceded it the few years before. And as for my siblings and myself, in spite of the fact that we had those awful years and our parents went through this terrible discord, the fact was that everybody loved each other so much. There was just so much warmth in our house when we were growing up that we managed to kind of climb over all the pain and come out the other side and still be happy in one another's company. So whatever was essentially there that was good and warm survived all the upheaval.
What effect did your mother's death have on your father?
Oh, it was terrible for him. He felt so guilty. He felt somehow that he, you know, brought it all on. His Jewish guilt really, really got him on that one. And it was very hard for him to recover. It took many years. And I think he exorcised a lot of the pain by writing his opera, A Quiet Place, in which the wife-mother figure dies, and then it all came out in the music. It's very, very tormented music in that opera.
Jamie Bernstein Thomas is the daughter of Leonard Bernstein. We'll continue our conversation after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Jamie Bernstein Thomas. She's the daughter of Leonard Bernstein. Since your father's death, you've worked with your family to preserve his legacy and to continue, in part, his mission to educate kids in music. And among other projects, you've produced concerts for children and families, I suppose in the spirit of your father's young people's concerts.
Not just in the spirit, but even but as an outright tribute, really. The original idea came from his publishing company that perhaps a good way to promote the Bernstein catalog of his compositions would be to create a young people's concert featuring his own music. And I said, that's such a great idea that I volunteered to write it myself. And then once I wrote it, I could imagine my voice narrating it. And so I did it myself with Michael Barrett, who co-devised it with me, and he's a conductor who studied with my dad. So we did it together.
So did you go back and listen to the young people's concerts and borrow from that blueprint in terms of audience participation and getting the kids excited?
You know, I didn't really go back to watch them so much because I kind of had internalized them already. So I just took what I remembered and what I had internalized myself and wrote them from what I remembered in my feelings, what it was like to listen to the young people's concerts as a kid and to use what I loved about music and what excited me as a key to what would probably work for other kids.
You took your concert of Bernstein music to Cuba. How did West Side Story go over there? Did they think your father got the Latin beat right, or did people feel it was presumptuous of the great American composer to borrow from their tradition?
Well, I worried that they would think that, but they didn't at all. They were thrilled, and in a way, it was like the music was coming home to the place where it was, you know, the cradle of all that music. The way my father got excited about Cuban music to begin with was one time when he was very young, he was in Key West and heard the Cuban music on the radio down there, because after all, Cuba's only 90 miles away from Key West, Florida, and the radio waves come right over the water. So he heard all these fabulous rhythms and was just enchanted, and all those sounds started coming out in his own music right away. He wrote Fancy Free only a year later, and it has that danzón in it, which is so catchy, and all those Cuban rhythms. And they came up again and again. And West Side Story has the mambo in it, of course, and you should have heard that Cuban orchestra play the mambo. I never heard anything like that in my life. It was thrilling. There were things that those percussion guys did that I never heard before, like things that made sense that had never made sense to me before. It was great.
Oh, how about the concerts that you brought to Beijing? How much exposure had the China National Symphony had to Leonard Bernstein music?
Zero. Zero. And also, American music in general, they knew virtually nothing about. And as Michael Barrett said when he was conducting those rehearsals, he said it was like dentistry to try and get those musicians to understand American music and those rhythms. I wish we could have done the young people's concert for them, because the concert that we do is about rhythm and would have taught them a lot of what they needed to know. When they first rehearsed Cool from West Side Story, which we all know goes da 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 da, they played it like this. Dun 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 dun, like a nice Mao march is how they played it. So poor Michael had to stop the rehearsal and explain about swing. And it's very hard to explain swing to somebody who doesn't already know it.
I bet that took a talented translator.
Yes, it did. Luckily, we had one, not on the first day, but by the second day, we finally got our translation act together.
Now, do you still compose music yourself?
I do when I get a minute, which I don't get a lot of. I have a lot on my plate. I have two kids, so the mom thing all by itself is pretty time-consuming. And I do these young people's concerts and a lot of radio stuff and narrations, and not to mention this Kaddish narration that I'm doing in Cincinnati. So the songwriting seems to take a backseat to all of that. And, of course, I bring a lot of anxiety and ambivalence to writing music. I just can't imagine why, but I do.
Well, Jamie Bernstein Thomas, I want to thank you so much. It was really fun talking to you today.
It was fun talking to you, too.
Jamie Bernstein Thomas is the daughter of Leonard Bernstein. She performs the role of the speaker in her father's Kaddish Symphony on Friday, May 24th, at the Cincinnati May Festival.